Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, the 18th floor here in downtown Chicago. And it's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about the books that you were taught in school. Which ones did you read? Which ones did you like? Which ones didn't you like? Are they still teaching the same ones? We're talking about road trip movies as well, and much more. 312-981-7200. Talk, text, Triple Play Thursday requests as well. So my guest right now is Melanie Lentz. She's a writer and a former Secret Service agent. She was hired at the age of 22 and worked in the Secret Service for years. And she ended up working with Nancy Reagan. She was assigned to work with Nancy Reagan as well on a protection detail. And she's currently writing a book. She's got a website. Her story is pretty amazing. Her website is MelanieLentz.com. That's L-E-N-T-Z. And I want to welcome Melanie to the show right now. Welcome to the show, Melanie.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
All right. Where are you originally from?
I'm from Southern California in the high desert. If you've ever driven from Los Angeles to Las Vegas, it's a big giant patch of desert you blew by going 85.
Okay. So that's where you grew up. Now, did you, as a kid, did you want to be a Secret Service agent? Was it something that fascinated you? What got you into it?
Oh, I had no idea what I wanted to be when I grew up.
Yeah.
And like most college students, I still had no idea what I wanted to be when I grew up. It's kind of one of those desperation kind of gets you out of your comfort zone sometimes.
Yeah.
So as college was winding down, I thought, well, I better figure out what I want to do with my life. And we had a family friend who had a daughter who was an agent, and I was hearing all these crazy cool stories about her life. And so I applied thinking, you know, I didn't take it that seriously because I thought, you know, I'm 22 years old, you know, what in the world are they going to think I have to offer? So I didn't think I'd ever hear from them. And over the next 6 months, I, you know, got calls for the written test and then the panel interviews, and slowly but surely I started realizing, I was like, I'm just not going to give them a reason not to hire me except for my age. So
yeah.
I guess that attitude worked, and that started quite the adventure for me.
Wow, that is amazing. 22 years old, and you get hired by the Secret Service. That's really incredible. So tell me about what it was like when you first got hired. You're a 22-year-old woman. Did they treat you differently than they did some of the older guys or anything like that?
I would say so, especially because I looked a lot younger. I looked way younger than I actually was. So, and by the time I got to the academy, a lot of the instructors were kind of old school guys. So it was, you know, seeing me come in, I had to kind of constantly prove myself. I mean, every class would start the same way when we got a new batch of instructors. It'd be former military, raise your hand, you know, and 50% of the people raise their hand. And then it's former law enforcement, raise your hand. And then the other half, except for me and like one person, will raise their hand. And so, of course, they have to look at me and say, oh, well, what did you do? And I have to be, well, I went to college and I was a lifeguard. I mean, does that count? You know, that kind of thing. So a lot of it was it's just constantly feeling like you have to prove yourself. And, you know, little things like, since I didn't have a military or law enforcement background, I didn't know how to stand in formation. You know, it looks all crisp and stuff in the movies, but you know, our first day, I'm just like following the leader, like, okay, do I stand here? Okay, I won't move. You know, so those little things that they could do in their sleep, you know, my classmates could do in their sleep, I had to learn and practice and stuff a lot more. But I think I just had my attitude was, I have to just stay trainable. Like, they can't expect me to know everything the first day of the academy. That's why I'm there, to be taught. So I kind of had that attitude, like, yeah, I don't know how to do this, but show me. I'll learn it. I'll give you 110% because that's my personality. So I guess that worked well for me, but I definitely, there was a bit of a learning curve, and it was, you know, pretty steep for me.
Yeah. What? Tell me about the training. What did you have to, what do you go through as a Secret Service agent during your training?
Well, we start at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, FLETC, as we call it, in Georgia. And that's where a lot of federal agencies go for kind of basic training. It was 12 weeks when I was there. You learn basic federal law enforcement stuff, basic handcuffing, fighting, shooting, basic federal statutes like search and seizure, those kind of things. And then after that 12 weeks, we would go to the Secret Service Academy, which is in Maryland. And I believe it was 18 weeks when I was there. And that is where things got a little more specialized. Like, we taught you the basics. Now you're going to learn how to work a counterfeit investigation, because the Secret Service works counterfeit and fraud investigations. So we'd have, you know, blocks of training on our specific kind of investigations, and then we'd have the protection element, and we'd learn how to investigate the threats, that sort of thing. And then coupled with all of that classroom time, you're getting, you know, beat up in the mat rooms and handcuffing 100,000 times and,
wow,
you know, doing that kind of stuff. So it was, you know, it was very stressful for me being 22 and being so young and just constantly nervous. But at the end of the day, some of the stuff was fun. It was, you know, there's not very many females that could say they're a Secret Service agent. It's almost like, I believe it's close to 90% male even today.
Yeah.
But being 22, I mean, I was experiencing things that, you know, I appreciated what I was experiencing because I knew that this was a special opportunity for me.
Wow. Oh, that sounds amazing. Now, so after your training, and by the way, let me ask you, you know, because some people don't know that that the Secret Service, I think when people think Secret Service, they think, you know, protecting the president. But there are a lot of other things involved in Secret Service. You mentioned counterfeiting.
Right.
And I want to ask you a question, Melanie. I know this is my little, have you ever seen the movie To Live and Die in L.A.?
Yes.
Okay.
it's been a while, but
right.
Yes, you know, I think the movies make us look a lot cooler than we really are, because my experience with counterfeit was you walk into the conference room and there's just stacks of it, like from local banks or police officers, you know, that had a report, and you're just, you know, looking at it with a magnifying glass. You're like, oh, yep, that's an inkjet printer. Put that in that pile and,
yeah,
you know, that serial number, you know, so it's a lot more tedious than the movies make it out to be.
Yeah.
But,
well, you know, it's funny because I interviewed the director of that movie. I happen to love that movie. And I interviewed William Friedkin.
Oh, nice.
William Friedkin. And I asked him, you know, how close did you get to, like, really showing counterfeiting? And he said that consultants came in and told him that he had to cut some stuff out because it was basically a tutorial on how to actually counterfeit money, all the way down to the poker chips and everything, all of that stuff.
Exactly.
He said was, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about that in training. We actually watched those clips in training as
a
demo.
Is that right? Wow.
Kind of how we totally did, because I don't think I'd seen the movie at that point, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I was 22 or whatever, and I hadn't seen it. And we watched the clip from that movie, and the instructor used that as kind of like a guideline.
Wow.
To show us, which is kind of funny. I forgot about that until you just mentioned that movie. But, yeah, we did watch that.
That's crazy. That's amazing. So your first assignment, you worked at the Los Angeles field office for, like, 8 years?
Yeah, most agents, in their career path is basically the same. You start in the field, as we say, in one of the field offices where you work, you know, the fraud and counterfeit investigations. And in L.A., we get a lot of foreign dignitaries that come in to do the whole Hollywood and, you know, Disneyland, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you kind of learn protection and learn your investigations with the smaller foreign dignitaries that come in. And then it's usually between 5 and 9 years you'll spend in the field. And then after that, you'll either transfer to D.C., which is the traditional path, president, vice president's details, or you'll go to a former detail, you know, the Bushes, Obama.
Yeah.
And in my case, I went to Nancy Reagan's detail when she was still alive. So you have a lot of options. But, yeah, the career path typically starts in the field. So a lot of people don't realize, yeah, there's a lot of dirty work and a lot of learning and a lot of practice before you actually get to do the cool stuff, you know, right, with the aviators and the earpiece and the presidential limo, that sort of thing.
So what were some of the things like? What were some of your memories about working in the field? What were some of the stories that were most memorable for you?
Oh, Lord. Well, you can't take a 22-year-old with a bunch of overgrown dudes, and there's going to be a lot of funny moments. But I remember a funny moment was I had only been out of training a couple years, and I was working surveillance because they called me a lot for that. Since I looked so young, I blended better than a lot of the guys with cop hair and, you know, the
right,
tactical cargo shorts, you know. So I worked a lot. I did a lot of surveillance, and it was for a counterfeit case, and the guys ended up driving to Vegas, of all places. It wasn't planned. It was kind of one of those, hey, we're getting on the freeway. I guess we better keep going. So we wound up in Vegas where they were trying to pass this counterfeit, and they wound up in one of the casinos. And we were walking around, and I kept getting stopped every 5 seconds by the police and the security that walk around getting carded, because it wasn't a planned thing. They didn't know we were going to be there. So I had to start every shift for the next couple of days by going to the security office to get a wristband so they'd leave me alone so I could watch these people. So I got teased about that, you know, little girl, go get your wristband before you can start your shift,
right,
you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But so those were kind of funny, but you know, there was, everybody always asked, well, have you met the president? You know, that's like the first question people mm-hmm. will ask you. And I kind of have a funny, interesting story about that, because Barack Obama was president most of the time I was on the job.
Yeah.
And I believe it was shortly after he was elected, but before he had taken office, I believe, he did a speech, and my post, you know, it's not everybody looks cool standing on stage on either side of the president. I was in the back, you know, backstage by the entrance to some, you know, off stage thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And Obama walked off the stage the wrong way. That wasn't planned. So he ran right into me on the other side of the curtain. And instead of being like, yes, Mr. President, you know, right this way, Mr. President, I just looked like a deer in the headlights. And he was like, well, did I go the wrong way? And I was like, that way, and pointed the other way. And, you know. And I was like, oh, you know, it's kind of one of those, you know, forehead, you know,
yeah.
palm to forehead moments.
Yeah.
Like, you idiot. Like, well, what were you doing? You just like, stared at the president and pointed and said that way. You know? So that's how, I hope he doesn't remember that. But that's how I technically met the president.
That's how you met him. Bumped into him and told him to go that way. That's
yeah, you're going the wrong way, Mr. President.
That's great. Now, you know, being, you know, this, you know, a young woman, did anybody take you under their wings? Did any of the guys with more experience help you out? Take you under their wings, or were you kind of left to your own device to kick it up your own way?
Well, for me, I was very lucky in that I did have some senior agents that helped me out a lot. Some of the senior agents were kind of assigned as mentors to some of us newbies in
yeah.
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough for that. I know some of my classmates, it was kind of, you know, we got out of training at the beginning of 2008, which was a crazy campaign year
yeah.
with the Obama and McCain Palin campaign. So we got, you know, trial by fire. I mean, we got thrown right into the mix right out of training. So a lot of people weren't so lucky, but I had a great, we called them group leaders. And he was, you know, had been on the job like 20 years, and he was like, you know, sit down, you know, this is how you do this. And I was very lucky for that, because had I not had that, I'm sure I would have made a lot more silly, stupid mistakes.
Okay. All right. Listen, Melanie, hang on, okay? I got a lot more questions for you, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, there you go. Melanie Lentz is her name. She is a former Secret Service agent, got hired at 22. And a woman, which is both kind of an unusual thing. You can check out melanielentz.com, LENTZ. And when we come back, we'll talk more about that and her time spent with Nancy Reagan. So a lot more to talk about here. But we're going to take a break here for the news, and then we'll come back. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 floors above downtown Chicago here. And we are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich will have the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6. And it's Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for your Triple Play requests. We're going to talk about the classic books that you had to read in school. Which ones did you like? Which ones didn't you like? And are they still actually teaching those? We're going to talk about road trip movies as well. But right now we're talking with Melanie Lentz, who is a former Secret Service agent. She's also a writer, currently writing a book. And she joined the Secret Service at the age of 22 and became an agent. And she's been telling us about some of the things that she's done. And let's bring her back to the show. Melanie, welcome back.
Thanks.
All right, great. So you're now, you know, you've worked in the field for a while, and then you get assigned for Nancy Reagan. Tell me a little bit about what that experience was like, and knowing and being a part of Nancy Reagan's life.
Well, as life usually does, it gets a little complicated as you get a little older. And when it was my turn to go up to my protection time, whether I moved to D.C. or whatever, I was married to a cop that was in the Los Angeles County area. So moving across country was a little problematic for my personal life. Mm. And luckily there was an opening on Nancy Reagan's detail, and she was in Los Angeles. So it worked out that was the best move for me personally, even though by that time I wanted to do the whole, you know, go to D.C. and do the whole cool stuff. But it ended up being, you know, a good move for me. But Nancy Reagan was in her 90s when I was assigned to her detail.
Yeah.
I went in the summer of 2015, and as we know, she passed away in March 2016. So my time with her was very brief, and I didn't really have much of a relationship with her in a traditional sense. It was very professional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people came to her. It was, you know, it was not not boring to say, but we just didn't do a whole lot. It wasn't a super crazy active detail.
Right.
But we had a lot of fun because most people came to her. So, you know, it'd be funny. You'd see the schedule. Oh, Diane Sawyer's coming for lunch. That's kind of cool. You know,
yeah.
So you know, that stuff was kind of fun. And it allowed my personal life to kind of continue. But as you know, we can talk about that in a bit if you want, but things just got complicated. And by the time she passed away, I was mid-divorce and handling it poorly. And, you know, life had just, like I said, gotten complicated. So my relationship, if you will, with Nancy Reagan really happened after she passed away and the events that happened after that, where I had a lot of life learning that I did from her. Little did she know that I would learn from her after the fact. But I was grateful for that experience, even though, you know, my life wasn't exactly going the way I hoped or wanted at mm-hmm. the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a basic question. Now, Secret Service agents, how long do the presidents and first ladies, they get Secret Service their entire life, even after they're out of office, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and Nancy Reagan, even though her husband had died, you know, many years before, she still had a small protection detail assigned to her. You know, granted, they're a little scaled back, you know, based off of the threat level and, you know, that activity and sort of thing. But yeah, they get after they leave office, you know, former president, former first lady, they all get protection for life. So.
And now, do agents sometimes get switched over, you know, get their coverage switched over if their protection, like they switch, like if you were with Nancy Reagan and then do you get switched over to another?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of it. We call it the needs of the service. So, you know, if there's a need for people on the vice president's detail, then, you know, next one in line is pack your bags here. You're moving in a couple months to D.C. So, yeah, there is some you can switch around. In fact, after Nancy Reagan passed away, I got transfer orders to D.C. To finish up my protection time there. But I ended up making the very difficult choice to leave the Secret Service in the summer of 2016, which is kind of where the book started, was just this starting over in your 30s kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's where my life was going. And as I reeled from all of these sudden life changes of, you know, quitting my job without another one lined up, which is something I don't do. And most Secret Service agents, you know, you're these type A perfectionist people. You don't do that. So my life, I was doing a lot of out-of-character things at the time. And as the more time went on, the more I reflected on how much I learned and how uniquely I learned a lot of crazy, cool, and sometimes sad life lessons from the Secret Service. And so that's kind of where the book started to come alive. It started with just kind of, you know, little essays, and then lo and behold, I'm like, I just wrote a book about my experiences with the Secret Service. How did this happen?
That's amazing. I'm going to get to that in a second, too. I so want to talk about that with you and how this experience shaped you. I have a couple of other questions. Now, the Secret Service has code names for the president and the vice president and all that stuff. Does that continue when they're not in office? Do you guys still use the code names?
Oh, yeah. Nancy Reagan's was Rainbow. So, you know, on the radio, we would say, you know, Rainbow departing, headed to wherever we were going, you know, some, you know, neighbor's party or whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, we still use them. It makes it easier on the radio. They kind of pick words that are, you know, can't be really mispronounced or misinterpreted on the radio. Rainbow doesn't really... You know, it's hard to miss that. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, no, we keep those names. It's kind of fun. And it's also fun during campaign years when you hear what the new, you know, the candidates want their names to be. Like, I remember, I can't remember. You know, Sarah Palin's husband, I just blanked on his name, Todd.
Yeah.
He wanted his code name to be Dude. You know, like, her first dude. And he didn't get his wish, but it was kind of funny to hear, like, you know, they kind of give him a, you know, what, you have an idea, what you want? He's like, yeah, I want to be Dude.
Yeah. That's fantastic. What were some of the other names that were thrown out? Like, did Obama want a particular name?
No, well, he was Renegade, and this is common knowledge. You could Google this, so I'm not giving away anything.
Right.
But yeah, he was Renegade, and I think he was liked that one, although I wasn't there for that particular thing. But yeah, I think they kind of give him like, oh, you approve of this one or whatever. But unfortunately, Todd Palin didn't get his dude wish.
He did not get his dude wish. That's
no.
that's too bad. Wow, that's amazing. So Rainbow was Nancy Reagan's code name. I guess that seems to fit, right? So how many people were assigned to Nancy Reagan at the time? You know, obviously at the time you were a part of it.
I'd say it's probably around 20 of us, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, about 20. So pretty small compared to, you know, I think, you know, there's 3,000 of the agents across the country. So not that many of us were on Nancy Reagan's detail by comparison.
Now, is it a 24-hour detail or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So you guys switch off shifts?
Yeah, we just had this shift rotation every so often. You'd go from, you know, mornings to afternoons, and then you'd have a swing of midnights. You know, just rotated through. So you kind of had a more predictable with a protectee who is in her 90s. You know, you don't have a lot of the sudden travel like on the president's detail and that sort of thing.
Right. So how long a shift would it be? Would it be 8-10 hours?
It just depended. Most of the time it was 8 hours if it was just a normal, regular day, if nothing was going on. But a lot of times when people are out, when protectees will go out, you know, it's like, oh, it'd be great if we were 5 a.m. to 1 a.m. or 5 a.m. to 1 p.m., but, you know, we're going to lunch at noon, so now we're going to work, you know, a 10 or 12-hour day just to avoid the overlap. So it's a lot of it is just a day-to-day, you know, variation. Flexibility was learned really quickly.
Yeah, I bet. And now, do you keep in touch with now you left the Secret Service, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but do you keep in touch with some of the people that you worked with?
Oh, yes. You know, you think in college that you've met your lifelong friends, and some people do, but it was one of those, I met, like, some really, really cool and awesome people, just good down-to-earth people, and I know even though I'm not working beside them every day, we talk all the time, and I truly believe I'll have these friends for life. I came away with that with some really cool people. You've been through some, you know, crazy long shifts or, you know, going in a campaign year when you're in Florida for one assignment, and then you get rolled over to Wisconsin when the weather turns and you have no clothes for the, you know, like,
oh,
I mean, you just are going through, you know, true story, that happened.
What happened?
I was working in the 2012 campaign. I was assigned the site advances, they call it. So I was kind of leapfrogging ahead, like Romney was going to do a rally somewhere or a speech, I would leapfrog ahead the week before and prepare the security plan for the site with the other team that's doing the motorcade and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But you're on the rotation for a certain amount of time, you know, say, hey, this rotation's 3 weeks or you may go 4 weeks, that sort of thing. So you pack your bags, you know, okay, I'll need a business suit, blah, blah, blah. But sometimes you get rolled longer than you were anticipating. And I went from Jacksonville, Florida, and got rolled to Milwaukee right as it started getting cold before the election. And I was like, whoo, man, I just went from sweating my butt off to now I'm freezing. And I'm from California, so I know I'm kind of a wimp when it comes to the cold. So I'll give you that.
I was
a little bit of a wimp there, but you know, just those things that you go, you're on these rotations with these awesome people that you just kind of have to laugh, you know, just like, you can't make this up, but it's an adventure.
Yeah, I mean, so you have to be incredibly flexible then, right? Because you never know what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's probably the lesson number one as soon as you get out of training, flexibility.
Was that something that you ever got used to? You don't get used to that, right?
No, I mean, you learn to anticipate it. And unfortunately, your personal life is the one that suffers as a result.
Yeah.
You know, you miss a lot of holidays. You know, the Obamas went to Hawaii every Christmas, so they always kind of had a rotation there, a volunteer to go to Hawaii for Christmas and stuff like that. But a lot of times it was just, you're on the travel rotation this month, you know, pack your bags, sorry, you know, I know it's your anniversary or your, you know, spouse's birthday or whatever. So that's hard. You know, it's the flexibility is on the job, but it's also kind of assuming or hoping that your family outside of it or your loved ones are also as flexible as the job is making you be. And that's a difficult balance for anybody in law enforcement, but especially with the Secret Service.
I bet. Yeah, I really bet. And now you said that you keep in touch with some of the Secret Service guys, people that you worked with. How are they feeling during the current administration? Is it tough? Are they having a tough time?
Yeah, well, a lot of people from my class are in D.C. now. Most of them are, just because of our hire dates. As far as the day-to-day life, I haven't heard, you know, a lot of complaints, and as far as how they're treated on the job, that sort of thing. But if you think about it, the Obamas traveled a lot, too. So people say, oh, there's so much travel. I don't know if maybe it's more or about the same, but...
Yeah.
You know, it seems like it's a lot more the same, just a different batch of people you're protecting.
Right, gotcha. Okay, listen, Melanie, we're going to take another break. When we come back, I want to talk about life after the Secret Service, and that's basically what you're writing about.
That's right.
Okay, Melanie, hang on. Melanie Lentz is with us. She is a writer, former Secret Service agent, was hired at 22 to be a Secret Service agent. You can check out melanielentz.com. That's L-E-N-T-Z. And we're going to talk more when we come back right after this on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs. Get them in now. Right now, my guest is Melanie Lentz. She is a writer, a former Secret Service agent, had some really incredible experiences, and now writing all about it. And we want to talk more with Melanie. Melanie, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about, before we jump into what you're writing about now and what you learned from being with the Secret Service and everything, you also wrote on your website, you have 33 things I learned by 33.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit. Tell me about some of the things that you learned and why you wrote that.
Well, you know, maybe it was a bit of a complex I had being so young. I kind of assumed I didn't have as much to offer. And, you know, I'm in my 30s starting over with life, and I'm still feeling that way. Like, well, why should I write? Like, I'm still so young. I'm 50 shades of messed up still. Like, you know, what do I have to offer here? And people would say, well, Melanie, think about this that you experienced. You learned this from this. And so they're like, you need to start writing down these little one-liners you're always dropping in conversation, you know, that you do have something to offer. You're not wise beyond your years, but you're learning like everybody else. So I started compiling this little list of things, and, you know, it started getting to like, oh, hey, I've got 33 on this current list. I was like, I'm 33 now. Hey, I guess I have learned a lot. And so that's how that kind of blog post came around. So it was kind of a little bit of humor to it. And
yeah.
Some of the stuff I learned is a little more serious on the serious end, but it was my way of being a little lighthearted about,
right,
like, hey, you're 50 shades of messed up, but, you know, all of us hover in the, you know, 48, 49 range is normal. So I'm getting there, and we're all kind of, you know, so I'm getting there.
Yeah. There's some funny ones on here. I like your goal weight is probably not your happy weight.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's a long story about that one. Just comparing yourself to magazines, a lot of the typical things you do. And I say, well, you know what? I am much happier when I eat that darn piece of chocolate than I am if I were to run 5 miles and eat broccoli. You know, I like to work out. I was an athletic person, but I was like, you know what? After all those years, like in your 20s where you're just trying to maintain this thing, and I was like, broccoli's great as a, you know, side dish, but have you had dessert? That's great. I'll, you know,
so, yeah.
And I'm much happier because of it. So that was a little bit of learning there.
Exactly. I like selling your wedding ring after divorce is hard, but it's a lot easier when you buy butterfly style Chanel sunglasses and the proceeds, with the proceeds and wear them everywhere to remind yourself that you're a caterpillar emerging from a damn cocoon. And then you said that's it. I love that one.
Everybody said, like, that's a crazy story because, you know, I loved my little wedding ring. I mean, I met my ex, we were 17 when we met, and so we'd been a part of each other's lives for a long time.
Yeah.
And so after we split, you know, in our early 30s, it was hard to, like, get rid of that.
Yeah.
And there was just one day we had gotten kind of in this little stupid, you know, argument over something stupid I can't remember, and I marched myself to the jewelry district in downtown L.A. and sold that sucker. Very impulsive. I wasn't in a good place. I will admit I wasn't in a good place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know what? What I got was these Chanel sunglasses, and I'd never owned anything in designer in my life because I lived in a business suit for the last, 10 years.
Sure.
Wasn't this fashionista or whatever, but I walked out of there with these giant, obnoxious Chanel sunglasses, and I wore those suckers all around. Luckily, it was L.A., so I blended in just fine.
Absolutely.
But for me, it was something a little bit, I've got this. I'm marching out of here.
No, absolutely. That's an incredibly symbolic thing, too, right?
Yeah.
Right there. So let's talk about what you're writing about or what you've written about, your experiences after leaving the Secret Service and what you learned. What are you focusing on there, and what life lessons did you get from that?
Right. Well, you know what? I realized the week after I left the Secret Service, I made the choice to resign the week before I was supposed to transfer to D.C. I mean, it was a last-minute, very impulsive thing. I was actually in a dorm room during the Republican National Convention. That was my assignment the week before I was to move.
Yeah.
And the hotels were all sold out, so all of us agents were staying at one of the local universities in a dorm room, which I thought was very weird in that how insecure and how unsure of myself I was in my own college dorm room,
yeah,
that I'm making this super sure decision to quit my job. I thought I've really lost it. I've lost it. But I just knew. It was one of those things where, like, I know I am going in a direction personally that I don't want to go. I don't know how I went from this bright-eyed and bushy-tailed 22-year-old with such great intentions to just lacking maybe the self-awareness, self-respect on my way. You know, my job became my identity, and I had no idea who I was that week after I left. You know, I turned in my badge and my gun and my badge, my credentials, that BlackBerry that never stopped going off.
Uh-huh.
And there's actually a funny story about that day I turned everything in. Is I walked to the elevator landing after, my boss said, good luck, Mel, blah, blah, blah. And I go to the elevator landing, and this guy walks into the elevator landing who I didn't know, but he had his, badge and his gun on, so I knew he was an agent. And he said, oh, hey, how's it going? I'm so-and-so. Are you one of the new agents they just hired? And I thought it was like a gut punch, like, oh, my God, I've just been replaced. Like, I'm already forgotten, replaced. This guy just, So that was kind of that gut check.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
So that started the learning. It was like, for me, it was I had no idea who I was when I wasn't my ex's wife, and I had no idea who I was when I wasn't a Secret Service agent. And that was a very sad reality. There was some very low times coming out of that, and a lot of it was just started with journaling and that sort of thing. But the more I looked back, I realized Nancy Reagan being there at her passing taught me about legacy. I was there in the embalming room when she was being embalmed. I mean, that'll prompt some life, contemplating life in
Absolutely.
And of itself.
Yeah.
But being at her funeral after that and hearing that despite any political opinions and scandals and whatever, Nancy Reagan's legacy was one of love because she had this, crazy classic love story and, one of those solid marriages that's so rare these days. But I learned more about just who do I want to be and why am I so off track? And so that started kind of, okay, I need to really reevaluate where I'm going as a woman, as a human. And so being at Nancy Reagan's at the end of her life and seeing her legacy of love made me realize, well, my legacy in my mind is this divorced, depressed, angry, resentful workaholic who has no idea who she is. So that started it. And the more I looked back, I realized, we have this thing called a situation report or a sit rep in our motorcades, which is basically just a status update.
Yeah.
Our destination is giving the motorcade an update on what's going on at the site,
right.
And it should be all clear for arrival. Well, I've been giving myself a pretty dishonest sit rep for a really long time. I lacked this self-awareness that, you're basically married to your job and your marriage is suffering because of it. And you don't have much of a social life, that sort of thing. You start realizing, I've been lying to myself and I have just humbled myself and admitted that maybe I needed to talk to somebody, even, stuff like that.
Yeah.
In law enforcement, you're not supposed to be that vulnerable. And maybe as a woman, I felt a little more pressure to suck it up. I didn't want to be perceived as weak and that sort of thing. So a lot of that was learning the self, self-awareness, which I always say I'm giving myself an honest sit rep, So
yeah.
I walk around like periodically I've got to do this honest sit rep with myself. Where am I and am I headed where I want to go? And the other part, one of the other really big lessons I learned was about access control, which, if you think about it, is fundamental to everything Secret Service. You got to control access to venues and ultimately who's getting access to your protectee. But in my life, I suck at it. I let people, you know, friends use me. In college, you know, you're just one of those people that's just a people pleaser, and you just don't know when somebody's access maybe needs to be limited. You know, it's kind of like, you know, the person that pins the microphone on the president before an interview. You know, they need access, but it can be limited.
Yeah.
Or, you know, this person's a heckler and they just threw a shoe at your protectee. You know, their access probably needs to be revoked.
Yeah.
Or maybe this person needs to be denied, and maybe this person's a positive access, so you grant them access. You know, it was like this balance of life that I hadn't figured out. So, you know, I kind of like live my life today as I think in access control, sit reps, and legacy, which are the kind of the three big lessons I learned. And I think that helped with the growth and healing process, and that's what kind of the book revolves around, those three big concepts in telling my story.
Oh, that's outstanding. I can't wait to read it. When will we be able to read the book?
Well, we don't have a release date yet. We're hoping sometime next year. But like you mentioned earlier in the show, my website is melanielentz.com. It's L-E-N-T-Z. And you can sign up for the newsletter and get all the crazy good updates. And I'm on Twitter at Melanie Lentz and stuff, and all those social media platforms I'm not very good at. But if you'd like to follow along there, hopefully we'll have some more updates soon, but it should be next year sometime.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be following along, Melanie. It's a great story. It really is. And you sound like you got it all together now.
Oh, no, far from it. I have fooled you and your listeners, if that's what you are. Just kidding.
Okay, well, listen.
I'm trying. I think it's I've tried, like we all are. You know, we're all trying to be not so 50 Shades of Messed Up.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, it's a great story, and it's been really, really fun talking to you, Melanie, and best of luck to you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right, take care. There you go. Melanie Lentz, everybody. What a great story. Check out melanielentz.com for updates, newsletter, and all that stuff, and keep an eye out for her book. Her last name is spelled L-E-N-T-Z. All right, we're going to take a break. The news is coming up next on WGN.